Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, of course, you are listening to The Scorekeeper. And I'm sure Brian is going to be joining me very quickly. You have to bear with us. We are on the road, so we're trying to get all this technical difficulty out of the way, but I'm sure we'll get it right. Brian, are you there? And he is not there. All I know is that I'm live. Well, at least I think I'm live. You are listening to Way in Sports here on NDB Media. Yes, of course, once again, I am the scorekeeper. Yes, I have hijacked his program. Well, I mean, not necessarily hijacked, but I'm in. That's all I can say. So, this is neat. Maybe Brian is there now. Maybe not. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and blather on because that is what I do. There are very few people that I would count as my peers when it comes to this. So all I got to tell you is I'm really jazzed about this. I'm really excited. I'm going to ask you to bear with me. I have to do a quick sound check. And yes, I heard my annoying voice in the background. So it's all good in the hood. He's asking me to call him now. Let me see. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I need to be in the switchboard, dude. That's what I need to do. So, this is very entertaining, ladies and gentlemen. So we ask you to bear with us. Let me see. All right, I'll see if I can call him. Let's see. Add call. Brian. Oops. Did I give his name up? Or is that Bri? Let me see. Brian Ellen Tart. Okay. Did we merge the calls? Brian, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. We might have been having a conversation, just you and I, so no one may have heard that. That super secret that we were trying to keep. Now I know
good,
calls are...
Yeah, that's top secret. I'm glad nobody heard.
Yeah, I'm glad. So we're good. I'm going to do a quick sound check in the chat room. Bear with me just one moment. And there it is. We seem to be caught up and right on. So life is good in the hood, so they say. I got to tell you, Brian, where are you at right now? I understand that you're being a traveling man right now.
Yeah, I'm coming back from Alabama to Atlanta, Georgia. So a good little trip, probably about 2 hours left, 2.5 hours. Around in that time. So how did you get in the chat room?
Well, actually, I'm not in the chat room because it's not open. So I'm just on your page listening. So people are staring at the recommended for you stuff and, you know, stuff like that. And I see your little weigh-in sports talk stuff. So,
cool. Yeah. Man, I appreciate you joining me today and having the show. It really helps pass the time by. And we were scheduled for a show tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern, but we weren't going to have it, so this is a perfect time to do it, so I appreciate you joining.
Hey, Brian, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad I was awake. Most of the time I'm usually asleep at this hour, both figuratively and literally. So, hey, it's all good. So where are you driving at this exact moment right now? This is important to me. Everyone whip out your Google thingies. Maybe we can even follow Brian or stalk him on the way home. Where are you passing right now this instant?
I'm in Glencoe, Alabama.
Did you say Greenbow, Alabama?
No, Glencoe, Glencoe.
I know. I just wanted to throw that Forrest Gump line in because you never know, like a box of chocolate, never know what you're going to get. And I'm sure there really is a Greenbow, Alabama. You ever been to Greenbow, Alabama?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I've never been. And no, I don't know if there is a Greenbow, Alabama or not. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, maybe that'll be something for the listeners to determine. So, Brian, since we're on an official conference, what are we going to be talking about today on your way home from Alabama?
Well, I guess we'll talk about some sports. What do you think?
I think that sounds mighty fine to me.
All righty. Let's start in the NBA. I don't know if you got a chance last night to watch game two. And it's weird how the Western Conference already has two games played, and Miami and Indiana play tonight, the first game. just kind of weird they didn't put Miami, Indiana in between that, but San Antonio out to a commanding 2-0 lead. Roger, what's your thoughts on that series so far?
Yeah, I know San Antonio is a darn good team, but they're actually turning out to be a monster, dude. They're just, probably the best coach in the NBA is right there, period. And these guys are just doing everything right, and they're just getting it done. San Antonio, fundamentally, wow. Dude, they're just getting it done. I really wonder if they're going to face Miami as to what's going to happen. But, you know, they look real good. But as far as the schedule, that's the NBA, man. I mean, come on. That's the NBA.
Yeah, I think they must have thought the Heat, they're going to take a sweep of the Indiana, San Antonio, Memphis, maybe go 6 or 7 games, so they just probably want to finish it on time. But I'm concerned watching the Spurs. I mean, they looked good game one. They took care of business. And then game two, they were dominating until the last few minutes of the game, and they really squandered an 18-point lead. And this game went into overtime, Roger. So my question to you is, coming back from 18 down, if you're Memphis and you lose in overtime, do you have confidence that you came back on the road, or did you use too much energy and just exhaust yourself to try to win something you didn't, and now you have to go back home for game three? How's that going to affect Memphis?
Well, looking at it, since you and I have both have played sports all of our lives, that is a crushing defeat. No one is talking about it. No one is cheering each other in the chat and the room saying, oh, yeah, we came back from 19 down or 18 down to make it a game. No, Brian, that's not good for the room, for the team. It just means it was a blown opportunity. People are just grinding their teeth because they had a chance. They're pissed, and no one is taking any joy in the fact that they came from behind to make it a game. It was a missed opportunity, and it's bad for the team. The only good thing is they're going home. Do they know they can play with them? Yeah. But, Brian, come on, dude. If you're going to lose a game, you want to lose 100-50. You don't want to lose 100-99, right?
Exactly. And you said Greg Popovich, and I agree with you, is the best coach in the NBA, you know, going into that game. But if you're the best coach in the NBA, you're at home, you have a veteran-filled team, how in the hell do you blow a lead like that? I mean, Popovich, it just looks like everybody was – is either A, they were just caught off guard, they let off the gas and Memphis got hot, or Vegas told them, hey, you need to win this game, but you can't cover the 5 points. I'm glad I took the 5 points, Roger.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, when you look at that, it's not good for San Antonio. You're blowing them out. You got to go for the kill. You and I have talked about this. It's that killer instinct, Brian. You've got to go for the kill. And when you let them back in, the only thing is, as a coach, you say, well, you know what? A win is a win is a win. It was ugly, but we won. Mm-hmm. But deep down, that's not good for a team. You know, hey, Brian, winning is the best thing, but, you know, it's still not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, and then if you're Popovich, I mean, you have to be confident in a way that your veteran team probably will not let that happen again. So now you have a win, you're up 2-0, and you can use that almost like a loss, Roger. If you're Popovich, you can bust these guys in practice. You can tell them how lucky they are, how they let the foot off the gas, and in game three in Memphis, if they get a chance, they need to close it out. So this spells almost disaster for Memphis, the way this whole thing shook out, because if Memphis was taking that game, maybe they would have won the next three in a row and beat San Antonio. That's how big of a momentum swing that game was. And if Memphis would have lost by 25 last night, oh well, it was a big loss. They'd get over it. But this has to take everything out of Memphis, because Popovich had that entire Memphis team, I mean, shaking their head, cussing each other, cussing the officials. I mean, they were just so confused last night with what Popovich was doing defensively to them. So I agree Popovich is the best coach, but Roger, Memphis is in deep trouble right now.
Yes, they are, Brian. Yes, they are. It doesn't look good for them. And I got to tell you, it's much easier to coach San Antonio than it is Memphis at this point, because – how do you get them off the floor? How do you, I mean, Brian, a speech isn't going to do it. You got to get into their head. You got to change everything. You got to work these kids, and you got to remind them what it was to win. That's what you got to get back in their mind is, guys, it is sweet when we win, and we have to win. But there is no tomorrow. It's tonight or when they play. That's, you go out, you play your game, and you don't care what anyone is saying, and you don't care what anyone is doing. Play your game today. Let tomorrow take care of tomorrow.
That's a good point. You know, if any team can come back, I believe it's Memphis. They were down 2-0 to the Clippers. You know, they lost 2 in L.A. They went back and won 4 straight. They were down 1-0 to Oklahoma City, and they came back, and I think they won at 4-1. So Memphis is undefeated at home in the playoffs, Roger. If they can squeak 2 out here, but they do have to pull one off in San Antonio, and I think last night was a game that if they were going to win, that was it. So, honestly, I think this series is about over. And I watched the officiating, too, Roger. I don't know how close you watched it, but how many calls did you see missed in that game? I'm talking about for both sides, not just, you know, against Memphis or against San Antonio. Both of them. Worst officiating I've seen all postseason.
Yeah, Brian, I can't tell you about the first half. I was paying attention to the second half, and I kept thinking about the game you and I called. It started to hurt in the stomach. Did it feel that way to you? Because that's what it felt like to me about the refereeing.
It was pitiful. I mean, the foul calls they were calling, the touch fouls, and then I saw Memphis get mugged 5 or 6 times and no whistle. I mean, then it would go revert to San Antonio. They would start calling against them. Tim Duncan was in foul trouble a lot. So I just think if you're an officiating crew and you start off that game calling that fouls every minute. You keep that pace up. You do not change it. And they would get tight, and they would let them play. They would get tight and let them play. Very inconsistent. It's got to be frustrating for the players and the coaches because you try to adjust as the game goes on to the officiating crew, and neither team could adjust. So you know both teams are very frustrated.
Yes, and Brian, not only are the teams frustrated, but so are the fans. Because, Brian, say what you want. What do we want? We want to see these guys play. Shut up and play. And the refs are getting too involved, and there's no reason for them to be.
Yep, they're making good money. They should not be seen in that game. They should not determine the outcome. But, I mean, I officiate basketball, so I can be harder on those guys. But when you're sitting right in front of something and you can't see any better than that, maybe you need to get new officials in. And we're going to talk about Major League Baseball officials in a moment. But, I mean, come on. They need an instant replay in the NBA before the last minute of the game. I mean, and they said it on TV last night. If someone, Roger, just say somebody's going up and you foul them. They call a foul on you, but you never touched them. They ought to be able to replay that once and a half and say, okay, let's look back at this foul. I want to remove it from Roger. He didn't foul him. So it doesn't impact the game, like take points off the board or anything. But if they come in there and look and you did not touch them, they should be able to change that and remove the foul off of you. So I'm looking for something, hopefully, with instant replay in the NBA, because the more you let these officials control the game, the more mistakes you're going to have. And it looked fishy last night to me.
You know, Brian, I look at it from the other way, and maybe this is where Conspiracy Couch has affected me very well. The whole thing is, look, NBA numbers are up. People are watching. The fans are going. They're buying the merchandise and everything. Things are okay. There is nothing that they have to do, really, because if the fans were unhappy, they would be running away in droves. And I don't know about you, Brian, but it doesn't look like to me that they are. So I don't believe we'll see the sort of instant replay that you're talking about. And honestly, which I'm talking about too, because how many times do we see a foul called and the guy's on the other side of the court? I mean, come on!
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. I mean, the consistency. So if I'm head of officiating in the NBA, I'm really focusing with these guys, and I'm saying, hey, we need to be consistent. We need to, I mean, if I'm the head of referees, that's exactly what I'm preaching. You're going to miss calls, Roger. You're going to miss calls. But together, you can work together and get them right, get the right call. But you just have to be consistent. As long as you're in position and consistent, and now we're going to flip over to baseball. You look at baseball umpires, Roger, and I'm sitting here watching a game the other night. I think it was, who was it, the Orioles and the Yankees. And maybe it was the Orioles-Yankees. Do you remember when Matt Wieters, I think is his name, he hit an infield single, he got to first, he crossed the bag, Yankees caught it, they called him out. Do you remember that?
No, actually, I did not see that one. I actually missed that one. I should have caught it, but I didn't get a chance. I haven't even seen the replay on it. I did read about it. We talked about this, Brian. We know the way the umpires at first base operate. It's going to happen all the time. Look, I, who was privileged to play high school ball, one of the first things that our coach said, remember, Brian? Let's hear that letter smack. Because you have to make the sound. Pound that ball into that mitt. You throw it, and you make sure you hear the letter smack. You make it smack. And that's because of the way the umpires operate. Let's go back to Don Banginger in the World Series. As everyone says, bang, bang, play. What is he doing? He is looking at the bag. And the minute he sees the runner hit the bag, he calls him safe. But actually, the first baseman had caught it about a second before, but it was a soft toss, and it went bad against Banginger. And I think that's what happened in yesterday's game too, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to look, but you also, the umpire first baseman, they're looking at the feet, they're looking at the base, and they want to hear that pop, you're right. But there's got to be somebody else around to say, okay, let's get together and let's talk about this. Or let's do the instant replay. That's where instant replay would be a good thing. When everybody in the stadium, even the other team, is laughing, they know you missed this. I didn't mean to get off basketball. We'll go back real quick. It's just an example of it. When you see an official make a bad call like that, that he even knew he screwed it up, Rob, you have to change it. Swallow your pride. Go to your partner. Go to instant replay. Do something and get it right, because this is getting ridiculous.
Well, you say it's getting ridiculous. I would beg to differ, Brian. It's always been this way.
Yeah.
And, my complaint has, it's getting ridiculous because of social media, instant television, everything is focused on it. Brian, let me tell you, I've always said, and being that you and I have played the game, my thing is, when someone cries foul, oh, we got ripped off, I'm like, hey, you know what? You were playing the same game too. Don't tell me that you lost it on a bad call. Why did you put yourself in that position to lose it on a bad call? You've got to win the game. And if it happens and the call goes against you, so be it. That's just the way it is. That's the way I grew up, Brian.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? You're going to get a call go for you, eventually, and you're going to win a game probably because of that call. So, yeah, I don't like people whining about it, but these guys are out here, playing every day. It's like a job, and these guys have to perform. They get paid based on performance. And when you take a hit away from someone because you're a stupid umpire and then you want to throw somebody out because they argue with you, I mean, it's just getting out of hand, and something needs to change. And one thing, I'm an official, Roger, but what I've noticed in baseball, basketball, anything, like the umpires in baseball, they're so quick to jump back in these players' space. They're so quick to, make a bad call. The players say something, they fire back something, and then the player says something, and they get ejected. Who's there to eject the umpire? Why does the umpire have that much control where he's in the wrong as well for coming back, cussing the player, or antagonizing him, and then he can throw him out? Something needs to be done there as well, Roger.
Fair enough. I agree. I believe the umpires, but, Brian, I also see that the players, especially in basketball, are moaning about every freaking call and move. To tell the truth, I have no problem when it comes to the refs in basketball, going into the face of the basketball player, because they are such whiners. My thing is, when the coach, hey, Brian, I told my guys, shut up and play the game. don't go after the ref. You think after you complain that the ref is going to give you the call after you just showed him up? My team never, ever, ever complained about the calls. If anything, the manager did only. You never show up the ump because the ump will win.
Yeah. And I've never seen an umpire change their call after you've argued with him. He's not going to change it for sure. I mean, you have to give him a chance to change it himself. And you can ask him, say, hey Blue, will you please ask for help? I know that was a tough angle for you. Could you help us out and just ask? So you'll get a lot more from an umpire going that way. Because I'm an umpire, and if I make a bang-bang call at first and say it's, I mean, you don't ask for help for a judgment call, but it could be a pulled foot. It could be something along those lines. But if you come at me with an attitude about it right off the bat, I'm not going to ask for help. But if you come to me respectfully, then I'll probably ask for help if I needed to. But you get a lot more with umpires being nice to them. But my problem is these umpires, I'm taught as an umpire, you know, you actually kill the controversy, really. You put out the fire. These umpires are starting the fire, and then they're keeping it going. That's the problem I'm seeing with them. They need to be fined and suspended, too, when they get up in a player's face. Or they cuss the player out as well. I think they need to be fined as well.
I agree. And that's something that they should work into the contract. I can tell you, Brian, I hear you when you say respect the umpires. I always respected the umpires when I was playing. As a matter of fact, I would treat them like human beings. I would always share with them, especially being at first base, whenever I thought the call was bad, what do you say when you're in the field? Come on up.
Yeah. No. Come on, Blue, get your head out of your butt.
Well, okay, I won't do that one, but yeah. But you're right, Brian. You let them know your displeasure, and that ends it, right?
Because
you know, it was so much so that you actually had to say something, and that puts it in the ump's head that, you know what, dude, come on, pay attention. And that's it. That's pretty cool about it. That's the way you do it. You don't get in face. Because I would do that from time at first base, Brian. And then I would talk to the ump, but I would never, ever, ever tell him he was wrong. Except that one time that I told you the story, right? When I flipped out and I still didn't get
through. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Roger, when I was umpiring, I'll tell you a mistake I made where I was behind the plate and the pitcher didn't like the call. He thought he deserved that corner, which it didn't hit the corner, and he was yapping at me about it for a minute. And I came back and I told him, I said, hey, if you could find the strike zone every now and then, I would give you that pitch. I came back as an umpire. See, that's an insult to him. And so guess what? He's going to come back now. He's pissed off. I showed him up, and now I eject him because he crosses the line. See, in that situation, I crossed the line as an umpire. I should have just said, that's a ball. Hey, we're not going to argue balls and strikes. I mean, that's it and be done with it. But, see, I came back. I had a bad day maybe, and I pissed him off. And, see, he's the one that gets ejected from the game because if I would have kept my comments to myself, then I told the batter before, one, he struck out looking in softball. Now, that's pretty bad. And when he started arguing with me, and I said, you're gonna go home and tell your wife you're trying to walk tonight? You got a 300 bat in your hand. Swing it. And when he went off on that, and see, he ends up getting ejected from the game. Where umpires, they control the game. That's your field out there. You have to show them respect too, the players, because they're out there competing. You're getting paid for a job. So I'm just giving you an example, Roger, where I was wrong and where I've learned as an umpire not to cross the line.
And Brian, I appreciate that because I've only umped one game in my life, and I was a young kid when I did it, and I blew the call at third base. And it's like the team that was the recipient of the call came up to me and said, hey, dude, you blew that call.
That's the worst feeling in the world when the other team says, yeah, I think you missed that one. Then you're like, God, now both teams think I suck.
I mean, the fans were yelling at me. I was a kid. I don't think I was in high school yet. And they just asked me to do it, and I was able to control the game. But, man, it was a bang-bang play at third, and dude, I thought my guy got him, but apparently not. And it was bad. I mean, the people behind me, they were cool, but they were like, dude, you got to get your butt out there.
You have to be in position. That's right. The key. Now, as a player, Roger, if you're an umpire, I'm a player, you're an umpire in the field, and I'm sliding in the third, you call me out, and I might have been safe. You were in position for that call, and you busted your butt to get into position. I might just look at you and say, hey, I think I got under that. You missed that one. That's it. But if you're out at shortstop making that call at third base, you're not in position, then I'm going to chew you, and you're going to end up ejecting me because I'm going to get on you so hard because your lazy butt was not in position. And that's what umpires need to know, and that's what we train in our umpire clinic is to learn. You get in position. Look the part. You come out dressed like an umpire, you get in position, and people will respect you. If umpires would work, see, Major League Baseball umpires, Roger, they're already at the big leagues. They have no motivation anymore. No, I mean, they're not going down. They made it to the majors. And once they make it to the majors, like I think we talked about that before, you said they get lazy. Now, minor league umpires are good umpires because they're working to get to that next level. So I think major league umpires need to take a play out of the minor league umpires' book sometime.
I agree, Brian. I really agree with that one. And, Brian, I'm going to ask you to bear with me one quick minute. I've noticed that my battery is very, very low. So I'm going to get the charger right now, but I'm going to ask you to keep talking. I have to get the charger. I will be back in just a moment, Brian.
Okay. Thanks, Roger, for joining me. And that's Roger Noriega, NDB Media. He has like 50,000 shows all during the week. So if you're ever out there, the main one I listen to is Sports Talk with the Guys every Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern. They're up at 6 Pacific spreading their cheer. They have a big following. They're the biggest sports show out there, one of them, and especially on Saturday morning, so we always catch that one. So join Roger every Saturday morning, and we'll keep going. I'll go back to the NBA just a second. We have the Pacers Heat tonight, game one of this best-of-seven series, and Miami hasn't played in a while. I mean, they could be a little rusty, but Vegas has Miami favored as 8 points tonight. I look at that. Indiana won 2 out of 3, I believe, against Miami, but the time they played in Miami, they got beat by like 15 points. So I'm thinking, honestly, tonight Miami's going to take care of business at home in game one. Indiana's going to have to steal one in Miami to win this series, and I think it's going to be game one or two. They need to steal it. Indiana's another team, Roger. I don't know if you're back, but they're undefeated at home, too. So tell me about this series to you, the Miami Heat and the Pacers. Who do you have winning and why?
That's a good one. First of all, Brian, I agree. We've seen this in the past where they can, if you're going to get a game, it's going to be game one. And often it's game one because the other team, the home team, has been off for a little while. That's usually a good time to get that game one. And it does happen, Brian. We've seen it. The more time you get off, unless it's football, the more time you get off, it actually it does hurt the team. We've seen baseball teams in the playoffs that win a series 4-0, and then they start another one against a team that won 7 games, and the team that won 7 games is playing better, and they usually take it to them. So in the case of Miami, I don't know if that applies because both teams finished up right about the same time, right, Brian?
They did. It was close, and you know, Miami swept the Bucks the first round, and they ended up, the Bulls played a seven-game series against the Brooklyn Nets, and Chicago came into Miami and took game one. Never won another game, I don't think, but, you know, Miami was caught off guard. I think you're right. I mean, if you can take somebody, if you're going to steal a game on the road, it's going to be game one, and I don't know. That 8-point line scares me a little bit, Roger. That's a lot on a basketball game. The Spurs were favored 5 last night over Memphis, and that's about right. But 8, it sounds like to me that Vegas is thinking this game's going to get ugly.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that, Brian. I think they've made a big mistake. But what do I know? The only time I ever bet on anything, actually I should bet, is when we got the Kentucky Derby right. And we did. We got it. We chose 1 and 2, baby. The big dog and I are forever going to be able to say that. Too bad we didn't bet money. We won a hell of a lot of money that time. But anyway, I don't see it, Brian. I don't see that Miami's going to do the blowout. I think it's going to be a lot closer than that. I think the team that was going to put up a better fight was Chicago, but I guess we all saw what happened. I just don't think it's going to be 8 points, Brian. They may win it.
but it's not going to be by 8. And I don't either. Yeah.
I don't either. You're right, Roger. And tell me about your comments about LeBron. You know, the Indiana coach came out the other day before the series is starting, and, you know, his coach talk, he says, hey, Miami is just another team. They're another step to where we want to go. Well, I don't think he meant that as Miami sucks, Roger, but LeBron James, crybaby LeBron, comes out, takes offense to it, and says they're a great team, actually. They're a very good team. So why does LeBron James have to comment on everything, especially? The coach is trying to let his team know, this is just one other roadblock we have to go through. We had to go through Atlanta, then they had to go through the Knicks, and now the Heat are just another team to them. It's not like, oh, they're in awe of Miami. So why did LeBron James take offense to that?
He took offense to it because he is a man who lives on the, you know, on Twitter and Facebook. He's a narcissist, and that's just the way it is. Look, no one calls Miami a great team. If he calls himself a great team, well, hey, good for you. I'm glad your managers and everything are doing very well. But Miami is not a great team. And
no. For
him to have to comment about the coach, whatever. Look, Brian, to tell the truth, whatever the coach says shouldn't be said in public anyway. So if you're going to say it in public, then everyone has the right, no matter how stupid and illiterate they are, to respond. Hence, LeBron James responds, the stupid and illiterate one. So, hey, you know what, whatever. If you're going to get offended, dude, it's like saying, well, you know, I'm tired of welfare recipients, and then someone over there gets mad and say, hey, don't make fun of my, well, I wasn't making fun of you, but you were stupid enough to answer. I mean, come on.
So tell me, Roger, is this fuel for Indiana or is this fuel for Miami?
Unfortunately, it's fuel for Miami because, you know, you're looking for any reason to get up to play, and it's just not good. Miami has another little chip on their shoulder and say, really? We're not a great team? Well, we're going to show you. So
Yeah. That's
why, Brian, whatever a coach says, you don't say it in public. You keep it to yourself. What did that real good manager tell you when you were just starting out to work? Didn't he say, look, I'm the boss. Whatever I say goes. If you have anything to tell me, yet tell me in private. Right?
Exactly. You never call your boss out in public.
You know, and the same thing applies. The boss should not, you know, call you out in public either unless it's, you know, something egregious. But what you do is you handle it privately. And when the coach gave that comment, he opened himself up, and it's not good. Maybe that's why Vegas has it at +8, because of what he said.
Yeah, I think, you know, LeBron James, he's healthy, but I worry about Dwayne Wade, and I worry about, you know, the key. And I've heard people say, you know, that I can't think of his name. What's the center's name for Miami? Chris Bosh? I heard he's the X Factor, but I want to tell you who I think the X Factor in this series is. It's going to be Ray Allen. I mean, he's been very quiet during this playoffs. I think he's been holding back a little bit, you know, until he needs to come out there. But, you know, Indiana is going to try to stop LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Bosh. They're going to really focus on them. So it's going to leave these three-point shooters open. Ray Allen, if he knocks down his shot, it's going to be a sweep for Miami in this series. I'm hoping he doesn't because I'm pulling for the Pacers. But watch out for Ray Allen. If he has a great series, it's going to be a short one for Indiana, probably.
Okay, yes it is, Brian. But now, as Indiana coach, dare I say, as Indiana coach, this is what I say. Look at what happened. Look at how Miami was living on the perimeter. If we can play the game down low, play our game, drive, and make them live on the perimeter, they're not going to be lucky forever. So that's my theme. I will let them take the shot outside forever. Play them tough on the inside and let them live out there. But that's what I would do and tell these guys, look, let's be obvious, guys. No cheap fouls. You know the refs are going to give it to LeBron. So just don't. If he's going to drive, let him drive. But don't foul him because the foul is going to, you know, it's going to go against us. Let them live on the perimeter. Let them die out there. And we play our game on the inside. That's the way I would do it.
tip. And you know LeBron's going to have a few flops up his sleeve here. He's going to be flopping the entire night. He's at home. He's expecting the calls. I mean, and at home, I don't think you should get called. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're at home, you should get all the calls. I don't believe so, but that's just the way it happens.
Hey, whoa. What was that? You're at home, so you should get all the calls? Who is the stupid moron that said that? I'm at home, so I should get the calls. Who is the moron?
Everyone says that. I mean, I've heard that a million times from people. Well, you're at home, like in football. Oh, the flags are going against the road team. Well, they should, because that's our home field advantage. You know, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You're at home, your advantage is your fans. That's it. You know, you get some momentum, you know, from the crowd noise and getting into the game. But as far as officiating favoring you because you're at home, I'm with you, Roger, but there's a lot of people that believe that. I promise you.
And Brian, unfortunately, I see it. In basketball, I notice that it seems that the stars, and when they're at home, the calls do go their way. And that does anger me. That really does.
Yeah, I mean, they want the crowd cheering. They want them buying beer. They want them spending their money. And if they go away happy, they're going to buy some merchandise, you know, outside or, you know, after the game, spend some more money. So, I mean, it's all about money. And these officials aren't stupid. And think about it. Even when I'm an official in basketball, especially in basketball, the crowd's going wild. The team's on a 6-0 run coming back into the game. You can decide with that team coming back with the crowd, I'm telling you. It's just human nature. That's what you have to watch as an official. You can't get involved in that game. You can't personally get involved emotionally. You can't look at the crowd noise. You have to call the game just like you see it. But I'm telling you, a lot of officials fall into that trap, Roger.
You know, Brian, I remember the 1980s. This might have been a little bit before your time. But I remember the 1980s when the Lakers played against Boston. And I remember, as a fan, I feared the idea of my team going to Boston. And it wasn't because of the officiating. It was because of that team that they had. But you know, even more so, it was the garden. Because of the garden, it was so hot. The air conditioning didn't work in there. It was a horrible place to play. It was tough. And then you had the fans. I mean, I remember the garden was a horrible place to play. That was home field advantage, Brian, at its best. You didn't need to have the refs on your side. You had McHale. You had Bird. You had Parrish. You had Ainge. You had all those guys, and those guys were good. I know I'm missing a few of them, Johnson and a few others. And
Parrish.
It was suffocating. It was the place where you were going. That was home field. You would see the Laker team go in there, and they were sweating, man, and they were sweating because it was hot. It was horrible.
That reminds me of high school basketball, what our coach would do. I mean, we had a big gym and everything, but we would practice with that heat turned all the way up, and we would practice. We would lose 10 pounds of practice, it seemed like, throw up. But when game time came, screw the fans. You bring a bathing suit if you want to. We're turning that heat up, and we're going hard at it. And a lot of people couldn't stand playing. We won probably 95% of our games at home because of that reason. We were in condition for that heat, and they weren't. So it's like Notre Dame football, Roger. They grew the grass up when they played Southern Cal a few years back. I don't know if you remember that. And they almost beat them because they slowed those athletes down for Southern Cal with the grass. So, I mean, a lot of people have their own home field advantages. They do different things.
Yeah. Brian, remember in baseball, when you have a – remember when – well, okay, I think you've read about this. When Ricky Henderson was coming to town, you know what they did? They would water the base paths a little bit more, and they would grow the grass. They would cut the grass so that the ball would move faster. As a home team, you let the grass grow so your speedsters can put the ball on the ground and they would, you know, it would be to their advantage. You tailor your park to your advantage. I'm good with that, Brian.
Oh, I am too. Totally good. But the officials, when officials start calling for the home team just because they're the home team, that's a big deal. That's a big issue. And I think I think a lot of officials do it, and I think a lot of fans expect it, Roger. That's the thing. They expect that to happen. And if you're a road team, you expect to get screwed. I remember in basketball going on the road, I knew those officials were against me. You knew it. They didn't want you to win in that hometown. They didn't want you going out of city and beating their team. So the officials, the homegrown officials that they have, cheat. And I think it happens a lot. Maybe not in professional basketball, but especially in the high school level, it's bad.
But then here's the thing, Brian. People listening to us are probably saying, well, these two guys are full of crap. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. First of all, we actually played in those conditions. And we knew the rules going in or how it was going to be played. So what did that mean? That we had to go in there and we had to go kick your butt. That's what it came down to. If it was going to be a close play, a bang-bang play, chances are it was going to go against us. So we had to be on our game all the time, and we had to take the game to you. And that's the way I learned how to play the game, Brian. It's just the way it is.
There's no excuses. If you're in a close game and you lose because of an official, it's your fault. You shouldn't have been involved in that close game. You left some runners on base, or you missed some free throws in basketball. Something caused you to be close, and that's the problem. But you have to take that into account. That's why there's not a lot of perfect teams out there.
Right.
I was a basketball coach, and I was finishing the season. We were 11-0, and we were going to another city, a rival of ours. We've already beaten them by 30 points. Finishing the season, well, you know, a fight broke out. I was officiating a game with one of those teams, and a fight broke out, and I was the coach of this team. So when I come to that city, they hated me, and they weren't going to let me get out of there with a win. We were 11-0, and we lost that game by 25 points, and that was the last place team in the league right there to beat us. And the officials, I promise you, that was one example I'll give you of we had no shot in hell to win no matter what.
Yep, I agree, Brian. And it's funny how we are in total agreement on this one. I mean, talk about a mutual admiration society, ladies and gentlemen. I'm lucky. Like Brian, we're both lucky. We had a chance to play. Brian does a lot more officiating than I do because I believe he does that today, and he's real good at it. And think about the stuff that he's telling you. It's an issue of respect. Don't make me look bad. Oh, Brian, that's another thing. I remember when I've taught kids, because I've run a few youth groups and stuff, and I've always played with the kids, showed them how to, you know, play the game and stuff. And I remember one time, the more athletic kids who were on the other side, they were just rocking us, just rocking runs after runs after runs, but then they went cold. And we started to come back, and we actually took the lead. And my team went, you know, they were all going wild. I'm like, guys, keep it cool. Keep it cool. First of all, don't rub it in their face. Second of all, if you're getting punked, you don't want to have it rubbed in your face. So be cool about it. If we win, we'll celebrate. But don't overdo it. That's the difference between a good team and a sucky team.
Yep, you act like you've been there before. You show respect in class. It'll come back to you. It'll come back to you eventually. You're going to have problems sometimes with teams, but as long as you keep your cool and keep respect the other team, the officials, the coaches, everything, it'll all work out. But this is a good conversation here on this.
Yeah, it is a great conversation, Brian. And there's another thing. I also know that when I was against a team that was clearly better than us, and they came to town and they whooped us. They whooped us, but they beat us, and they were cool. I mean, not cool about it, but they were professional about it. They played their game, and they didn't show us up. Yeah, I disliked them, but, you know, I respected them because they knew they were better. They went out and kicked our butt, but they didn't show us up, dude. And that meant a lot to me because all I know is that next time I'm like, all right, I know what we're up against next time, dude. It's not going to be as easy next time.
Well, I know that. And you know, and anybody listening out there, you're coaching a team, and if you're playing a game, and you're playing a game and you're beating a team by 20 runs in baseball, and now you hit a gapper and you only take one base at a time, trust me, that's showing guys up, too. I'm not saying take extra bases and try to just run it in, but just don't make them look bad by not trying to score. That makes me feel bad as a player, Roger. If I'm playing against you and you're taking it easy on me, I don't like that either.
That is so true. If I know I'm getting whooped, and then they're less, you know, they're, like you said, taking it easy, yeah. I'm like, you know, let's just get this game over with, dude. Whatever you're going to do, if you're going to score another 40 runs, just hurry up and score them.
Yeah, I hate that. And a classless act example, when I was coaching basketball, we were in three overtimes. We were short-staffed that day. I had three players left on the court. And this is basketball. We had three players left on the court. That team had five. They were up 8 points, and they were pressing us. And, you know, the game was already over. I mean, it was really over. But, see, I think they took it excessively. That's an example of it. You just don't want to pour salt in the wound on someone either. So you have to be careful. Just play the game like you normally would, and I think you'll be fine. Don't you think?
I agree.
All right, good stuff there. And while we're in the NBA, I don't know if you heard about the NBA lottery that just took place.
No, I missed out on that, Brian. I think I worried about my own lottery. Oh, I know what I was worried about. There was a lot of political news that took place yesterday, Brian. A lot of it related to stuff that's south of the border, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. So, hey, well, while we're out here, I just want to, you know, send some thoughts and prayers out to all the victims of the tornadoes out there. There's a lot of damage going on in the Midwest. A lot of kids lost their lives yesterday, and I just want to, you know, think about them, let everybody know, say prayers for the family. That's a catastrophe, Roger.
Yes, it is. And ladies and gentlemen, not to make a big deal of this, but pay attention. This is huge. That thing was 2 miles wide. A lot of people lost their homes. They lost their lives. They lost friends and family. It's going to be difficult to get over, and yet they're already doing it. People are rushing to the aid because that's who we are as Americans. We, you know what? We don't even say it. We just do it. And I was reading some posts on Facebook and Twitter, and someone said, notice how no one responds to us? And it was generally directed at the rest of the world. And I guess my only comment is, yeah, because that's the way it is. Because we are the big kid on the block. We go to help everyone, but no one comes to help us. And my answer to that is, you know what? That's fine. We're Americans. We'll take care of it ourselves. And that's what I was most proud of yesterday, is seeing people that didn't know anyone else rushing to the assistance and to the help of others. It's just phenomenal, Brian. It always gets me, dude. It always gets me.
Well, you saw in any tragedy that we've had in this country, and we've had a lot in the last few years, I mean, Americans are showing their true colors, are coming out, they're showing up, supporting, helping, sending money. I mean, that makes me proud to be an American. There's some days I'm not proud to be an American, I promise you. But when catastrophe hit, when disaster happens, I mean, these guys are coming to rescues, and that's a true hero in my opinion.
Yeah. My thoughts, my prayers, my family, we are all thinking of everyone. You guys are not alone. I know, and this is to the people in Oklahoma. You may not be listening now, but understand we are talking about you guys and we are thinking of you guys. And from my family and from everyone else, we know what's going on and we are shocked in silence at what you're going through in Oklahoma. And we are doing everything that we can to help out. And
exactly. Thank you for that.
Well, you know what? It is true, Brian. Our thoughts and prayers and anything that we can do are doing. And many other people are. And that's what we're proud of, right, Brian? Even if you can't do anything today, you know, woe to the bastard that's being insensitive right now, huh, Brian?
Oh, exactly. It'll come back to you. Well, be there for others and they'll be there for you. I mean, that's just the way it works out. And, I mean, these kids didn't know. They woke up that morning. They just went to school, all business as usual. They had to stay at school, and then they die. I mean, that's just a tragedy when you see kids, innocent kids, lose their lives. But these tornadoes are getting worse every year. So you said the tornado was 2 miles wide, actually?
Yeah, Brian, that's what they were estimating yesterday, that it was 2 miles wide. My wife told me early in the morning, because she says, well, I understand that they've had something going on in Oklahoma. And I said, no, I'm getting the messages right now, babe. And this one is bad. I said, well, I saw it in the news, all this stuff. I said, no, babe. What you saw this morning was yesterday. What just happened right now, and, you know, I told her it was a monster what hit. And she was very somber and very sober about it. And my daughters, too. I said, look, girls, you need to know what's happening. You need to know. I'm not saying watch it and live it, but I'm saying you need to know what's going on. And no jokes. Don't be stupid at school, because there are some people that don't have homes right now, and it's just that's a sad feeling for me, Brian.
And there's some people that can't find their kids. You know, they're missing. And could you imagine the parents at home tonight, today, wondering what happened to their kid? I mean, just – and there's no other pain probably like that in the world, Roger. But, you know, our prayers have to be out, thoughts with those guys. And any help you can do, do it. I mean, donate to the Red Cross, donate the fund. I'm sure they'll be all up. But anyway, thanks for all that sharing there, Roger. And let's get back to the NBA lottery. Do you think the NBA lottery is rigged? I don't like the way they do the entire thing, because the Cleveland Cavaliers, they got the number one pick again.
Yes, Brian, it's rigged. Let's see. Hold on a minute. What does the number one team get? Like 300 balls? And then the number two team gets, like, what, 5 balls? Come on,
yeah,
Brian.
It's a big difference. And Cleveland, I mean, it seems like every year I turn around, Cleveland, it's like they're paying them back for LeBron James leaving almost. Like, here, we're going to reward you for this. I mean, these guys are getting the top pick every year almost. And, you know, I saw Jason Minson post it yesterday. He's like, thanks, Stern. I hate your lottery. It's rigged, you know, more than anything. But, I mean, why don't we just – the worst team gets the pick first no matter what. The second worst team gets the pick second. Why don't they do it like every other sport?
Now, explain to us, Brian, what's the difference between this lottery draft and the regular draft? What's the difference?
Well, you know, like a regular draft like the NFL, I mean, you get to pick where you finish. Like, if the Dallas Cowboys finish dead last place, well, the next year in the draft, they have the number one pick. And so forth. You can trade it and everything. But the lottery, I just don't like it because, I mean, you could suck for year after year after year. The point of the NBA is you want to establish some, you know, the teams getting better. You want to see them compete and be more competitive. That's why the worst team gets the first pick. That way they can take the best player available, or they can trade it down and get more draft picks to make their team better. But this lottery is a joke. I mean, you could have the 10th best team in the NBA get the first pick, and guess what? Now they're champions the next year.
Yeah, I actually thought this lottery was in addition to the regular NBA draft. But I guess, no, this is the NBA draft then, right?
I believe so. I believe they picked in for the order that they get to go. You know, the lottery is like, okay, who's the first pick in the draft? It's going to be Cleveland, followed by, I think, the Orlando Magic. You know, I mean, those two teams pick first in the draft, first and second. I believe that's how they establish their order, is by picking the balls out of the little balls going around, you know?
Yeah, well, just goes to show you, that's what the NBA does, and I just don't think it's appropriate. It's, you know what, it should be based on how you finish, and that's it.
Well, I'm going to go study that more, and we'll talk about that maybe Saturday on your show. But let's move on real quick before we get to baseball. Let's go to the NFL. There's some news in the NFL about the commissioner, your boy Goodell. He's wanting to expand the NFL season to 18 games. Or he's possibly wanting to make the playoffs longer. So what's your thoughts of cutting the preseason by 2 games and adding 2 more regular season games?
I just don't believe it's appropriate for the players. If anything, they're just going to extend the preseason
as far as the team warming up and stuff. I remember, Brian, that when you play the four games, you're doing it. There's a way of doing it to get ready for the season. Now that's going to be all cut out. Look, we knew they were wanting to go to 18 games, and they're going to do it. It's just the way it's going to be. So, Brian, I see it happening. It's going to be 18. I don't know. I'm not happy about it, but hey, whatever. If there's 18, games, what is that going to mean for the NFL now? That's two extra games a year, right? That means that player careers are probably going to be shortened that much more so now.
Yep. And think about the concussions, and they're trying to make the NFL safer. I think by adding more games, you're heading in the wrong direction, and you're sending a wrong message. I mean, you want to get safety better, but yet you're going to put these guys out there for two more strenuous games and risk injury. But preseason is different. And I hear people say, well, they're just cutting preseason down. But, in preseason, the best players don't play much. They might play a few snaps, just to stay loose and get some, get in sync with the offense. But they don't risk their lives in the preseason and go out there and try to make every play and to win every game. You know that as well as I do.
Yeah, because as I understand, the first two games, they're going through the shakeout. They're getting all these other players in. By the third game, they're actually starting to hit a little bit. And by the fourth game, they're actually playing the game in preparation for opening day. And now they've gotten rid of all of that. And I don't know, Brian. I just don't. This is going to be one of the biggest shakeups that football has ever seen. I don't know, Brian. This is the epitome of greed. The fans don't have a choice. It's going to be the way they want, and I just think it's going to be bad for the players overall. We're going to be seeing shorter careers, more injuries. It's not going
to
be good.
Well, it's good for the fans, two more games you get to go to. That's awesome for fans, but you have to think about it for the players and the coaches. And think about this, your boss gives you a salary, and they say, we want you to work Monday through Friday, and that's the deal. You work Monday through Friday forever, and now all of a sudden they say, now you're working 7 days a week now. I mean, well, okay, well, what about my pay? Are you giving me a raise to compensate? And I think that's what the NFL players will be wanting, bigger contracts now.
Yes, I agree. Everything has been set up on 16 games right now. Well, guess what? Let's do the math, Brian. They're going to go up. Let's see. There's several ways of doing this. But 2 out of 16 is basically 12%, right?
Yep.
It's 12%. That means all contracts, everything should go up an automatic 12% without even batting an eye.
I think more than that, because now you're risking injury more. You're having, wear and tear, shorten your career. Like you said, Roger, okay, you're shortening my career. Now you're going to have to pay me for it because I would have made more money in the future, or I would have made that money. So there's a lot involved in this than just adding 2 games to a schedule.
Yeah. Right now, Brian, we're basically playing 17 weeks now. So what we're going to see is really 18. It's going to be one more week. That's what we're going to be seeing now. The revenues that the NFL are going to collect are unbelievable, just astronomically unbelievable, Brian. And that's the only reason why they're doing it. So I don't see this not happening. This will happen. 18 games, wow. So all the records that we have now, kind of became meaningless. Because when they increased to 2 games, 30 years ago, now they're going to do it again. So
yep, that's a good point. I was about to bring that up. Now the rushing records and, touchdown records, you have to go back and count it the same games as, say, Dan Marino played in or Barry Sanders and all these guys. Before long, the record will be broken almost every year now. You keep playing as many games as they're playing.
Brian, I don't think the average fan is going to care. The only time I think they're going to be happier because of it, because it's more football, more Sunday opportunity to watch.
This is now 18 solid weeks of a regular season. Remember, the NFL, and this is what I thought you were going to bring up when you said about the news, is what Roger Goodell said yesterday about the NFL draft. Apparently there's an issue with the draft next year or within the next few years having to do with the Easter season, because sometimes Easter falls on the exact same time of the NFL draft, so they've got to change that. Well, the NFL is thinking of moving to a different city as well as changing the date, so there's a consistency to the NFL. The NFL is now going to 12 months. That's what they're doing. It's year-round now, Brian. And the 18-week schedule will allow them to get there much more easily.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. That's over four, that's almost 5 months. And once you count the playoffs, almost 6 months. I mean, wow, that's a lot of time. And you know what, Roger? Less time off for the players as well.
Yeah, well, let's see. The preseason games begin in August. So that's August. And, you know, the NFL is already buzzing right there in August. August, September, October, November, December, just like you said, 5 months. And then you have January, which is 6 months. And then you have the Super Bowl, which is now in the seventh month. And then you have the draft, which is in April. And then you have the start of the new season, which is in May, if I'm not mistaken, when free agency begins. So, yeah, I see it, Brian. They're changing everything. When is the combine? Is that in March or February? I guess it's in March, right?
Yeah, I think it's in March, actually, I believe, yeah. Because I saw that a couple months ago. They were getting ready to draft, and these guys were trying out. So, yeah, it's in March.
Okay, so that means that the season is now going to begin when? In September? Or is it going to begin in August?
It's going to begin in August,
yeah. Yeah, because remember, you only have 1 week that's, dare I say, superfluous. So is it going to be the last one in August? So now, Labor Day weekend, which was the start of the NFL, is now probably just going to be week two. Or do you still start in September and now go into January and into February?
Well, the thing is, they give college football their stage for that first week. And, you know, always the first week of college football, there's no NFL. It's all college. So now they're going to have to go into uncharted territory and try to compete with college football for week one. That's going to be interesting to see who wins out in that.
I think the NFL is going to win that one.
I don't know. I wouldn't be so sure about that. I mean, college football, there's a lot more teams. There's a lot more fans. And I don't know. It'd be close. But usually, you know, I like it that they separate it out like that. So you get that first week of college under your belt. Then the next week, Labor Day weekend, or wherever, the next week, you get to watch NFL on the stage by itself. College is still going on, but college football likes that week alone without the NFL being in it.
Well, then, Brian, if that follows, then now we have the Super Bowl in the middle of February, which, again, extends the NFL season and gets it closer to what Roger Goodell wants to do, make the NFL 12 months a year.
Yeah, but then you're hurting college basketball. Because, look, I don't watch basketball as much when football's on. And so you have a lot of basketball. You know, they end up, the tournament starts in March. So you're about conference tournaments when the NFL is going to be over. That's going to hurt the college basketball attendance, TV ratings, everything.
Oh, well, okay, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. You're telling me as an NFL owner, you really care what the other sport is doing?
No, not at all. I'm just talking about me as a fan, you know, of all sports. I want to watch college basketball too, but now, I mean, I would pick football 100 times over basketball to watch it on TV, which, I mean, that's good, but college basketball is going to suffer now.
Now, Brian, tell us, what did Roger Goodell actually say about this going to 18 weeks?
I mean, they're dead serious about it, and they said on it, it's going to happen. It's either they're going to extend the playoffs. They're going to make more teams in the playoffs, make playoffs longer, or they're going to make the regular season longer. I vote to make the regular season longer because you let more teams in and you extend that, it's just going to water it down. Everybody doesn't need to be in the playoffs. It's like every kid getting a trophy when they compete. You don't deserve it unless you win. If you're an under 500 team, you have no business being in the playoffs.
Let me see. 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago now? 7-9 and 7-9.
Who was in there?
Wasn't it the team I call the Mariners and the Giants? I mean, the 49ers. Weren't they 7-9 fighting for their division? Or St. Louis?
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. St. Louis and San Francisco, all those guys. I think there was a team with a losing record in there. You're right. I don't like that. I don't like division winners going. Put the best teams out there. But would you rather see the playoffs extended? Or would
no.
you rather see the
I want to see the regular season extended. I don't want to see an extension of the playoffs, Brian. Hey, Brian, are you there? Did I lose you, pal? Oh, I think I did. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I lost Brian, so I'm going to have to bring him back in a moment. So I'm going to add the call and see what I'm going to do here. We are having technical difficulties, so I ask you to bear with me a moment. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have to call back in. So give me a moment here. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. We had technical difficulties. But let me go ahead and bring Brian back in. Go ahead and merge the calls, and I think we've done so now. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for bearing with us. I know we were off air for about 30 seconds. What happened was when we lost Brian, I lost basically the conference call, and I was unable to bring him back. So that's why I had to hang up, dial back in, and then bring Brian back on to activate the conference. So we just
thank
learned
you, Roger.
Today.
It's hard doing a show on the road. It's hard doing a show on the road, but it's fun, though.
Yes, it is. And it's going by very quickly. You know, Brian, I got to tell you, when we did that basketball game, to me, it felt like it lasted maybe 20 minutes.
Well, it did. I mean, it flew by. I mean, halftime was here. It seemed like in 15 minutes we were taking a break. And then the second half just went by even faster. So, I mean, it's a fun thing. We need to do that again very soon.
Yes. As a matter of fact, no matter what you say, I think, Brian, that was still a good game to watch because there was a lot to talk about during that game, Brian.
Oh, it was fighting, intentional fouls, flagrant fouls, technical fouls. I mean, it was everything you could hope for when you're calling a basketball game. It was within 2 or 3 points the entire game, back and forth, a lot of lead changes. So it was fun, man. We hit the jackpot picking that game.
Yeah, and that I want to thank Brian on, because we did. We got the jackpot. Screw the Lotto widow in Florida. We did a lot better than him.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, back to the NFL, though, I'm mixed feelings about this, Roger. I really am. As a fan, I know it's going to affect my fantasy team. I'm going to have to keep that in mind. I mean, you know, I love to watch football, but there's got to be an end to it because these players, what about the players' union? How are they going to feel? Can they veto this and not actually play?
Well, it's in their contract, Brian. It's got to be negotiated. And, you know, it'll be worked out, Brian. It's just an issue of money. Trust me, Brian. Can they veto it? Sure. Sure they can veto it. But we all know what happened last time. The players didn't want to play. They went on strike and everything, and the NFL just brought in scrubs. Remember that?
I don't remember that. When did that happen?
I think that was in the 1990s when strikes were happening in every sport on a regular basis. I think it was 1989, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am. The NFL played 3 games with replacement players.
Hey, Roger, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Brian.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I thought we had a bad connection. But I remember the movie The Replacements, but I don't remember bringing in scrubs to play, though, in the regular NFL.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was during the season, and the big brouhaha was that the replacement player record did count. And I remember the Raiders were 1-2, and that counted on their regular season once the players came back. They broke the union back then, and I think it was in the late 80s. I'll have to look it up right now. And, you know, if the players don't want to play, you know, sure, the NFL will get players to play. They'll have no problem, Brian.
Yeah, but, there's a lot of people out there looking for work. You know, come out and play a few weeks in the NFL, why not?
And they will. But the reality is the fans want to watch the stars. They don't want to watch replacements or scrubs. But if I remember correctly, a few of the players that actually were replacement players became professional players because they did so well. And I think it was at the start of the season when it happened. And I'm going to look it up right now. So why don't you continue for a quick moment, Brian, and I'll have that information for you in about 40 seconds.
All right. Thank you, Roger, as always. But, you know, the NFL, like Sonny says always, is such a cash cow. What, like $12 billion? And now it's going to go up even higher. I mean, you know they make more than they're reporting. Of course they are. But Goodell, all he's done since he's been commissioner is get very, very rich, Roger, and make these owners very, very rich.
Yep. And here it is, ladies and gentlemen. I said it was the 1989 season. I was mistaken. It was the first year out of high school in September of 1987. This is from Wikipedia, so I do apologize for the stupidity and inaccuracy. The 1987 NFL season was the 68th regular season of the National Football League. A 24-day player strike was called after week two. The games that were scheduled for the third week of the season were canceled, reducing the 16-game season to 15. But the games for weeks 4 through 6 were played with replacement players, after which the union voted to end the strike. 85% of the veteran players did not cross picket lines during the strike. But the replacement players were given mock names like the Chicago Spare Bears, the San Francisco 49ers, the New Orleans Saint Elsewheres, and the Washington Scabskins, and the Seattle Seascats. Yes, there was a lot of stuff. NFL revenues were down about 20%, and, you know, the NFL champions, the New York Giants, went 0-3 in replacing games, ultimately costing them a chance to make the playoffs and repeat their championship. So it was pretty crazy. Several players did cross the line. Even though they say 85% of the players did not, 15% of the players that did were big-name players. And that pretty much ended the strike. And the union.
Think about it. You have a family to feed, Roger. I mean, are you really going to give in to peer pressure sometimes? Are you going to go to work and make money? I mean, you have to be a man sometimes to make your own decision.
Well, Brian, I am a union steward. I know all about that. If I know that my contract is going to end September of that year, from January, I know there could be a chance for a strike. But you know what? I'm putting money aside.
And let me tell you something.
Every time they start talking about strike, all these activists,
I'm not going to deprive, you know.
It's so funny that these, and I'm sorry to say it, these pussies always say, well, I can't afford it. So one year when I knew there was going to be a strike in January, I told all of the field guys, all right, boys and girls, this is a contract year. Meaning at September 30th, that's the last day of our contract. Meaning we could go on a strike. So I looked at all 80 guys in that office in that meeting, and I said, plan for it. Because I don't want to hear any of you pussies telling me in September that you can't afford it. So you start putting money aside right now. Because if any of you, and I say it again, if any of you pussies pull that out, trust me, there's going to be hell to pay. And you know what? Do you know what they all got mad at? Because I told them that they couldn't use that excuse 9 months from now.
Pussy, well, Robbie, you have to agree that some people you know, they live paycheck to paycheck, and they don't really, they can't afford to put money aside.
Ryan, you are so right. You are so right. But that's why we prepare in advance. And we're talking about civil servants, Brian, that are paid good money.
Yeah. But, so, you know, anyway. I was at top of the union as well, and all the talk about strike. I was in the union. I was a paid member. No, actually, I didn't pay. I was represented by a union without paying. I didn't join the union when I had a factory job before. And there were some people mad at me because I didn't join the union.
Yeah, and it does happen, and so be it. That's just the way things are. Those are circumstances, and you know what? Hey, it is what it is. And I have nothing against those people that are either a part of it or not, or they're part of a closed shop. That's another conversation for another day. And all I can say is that when those people crossed the line, their excuse was, well, I can't afford it. I'm like, dude, you're an NFL player being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're going to tell me that you knew this contract was coming up and you didn't put money aside? That's my point, Brian. That's
exactly.
My
point. Roger. Speaking of money, has Blog Talk Radio paid us yet?
No, they have not. And it says on the Blog Talk Radio page that they pay us 45 days after the end of the month.
It's way past 45 days.
Yeah, again. They don't pay us. Well, they'll probably pay you, but they won't pay me.
They haven't paid me. It's the 22nd today, and it says on the thing, payable the 15th. So we're a week out. I'm waiting for money for officiating. I'm waiting for Blog Talk Radio money. I need the money. I mean, these people are using my money to make money and not pay me my money. I'm about to strike.
I agree, Brian. Let's strike. I'm in.
Exactly. I'm about to strike. Well, you know, Roger, how would you like to finish this conversation with some baseball talk?
I'm in.
Is that what you like to talk about?
Sure. I'm in.
I don't know if you were up. You were probably up watching it last night's game. I was watching it. I was intrigued by it. The Washington Nationals at San Francisco, we had Strasburg and Kane battling it out. I don't know if you got the chance to see the walk-off, Roger.
No, I really did. I missed out yesterday because I tell you, I missed the Yankee game. I missed that walk-off, too. If you don't mind, I'm going to borrow a little bit of your platform right now, but we booked a big guest yesterday, and we were in negotiations yesterday over the time and stuff. He is a friend of the NDB Media Network. I think you saw our posting, right, Brian?
With the comedy?
No, actually, John Billingsley. For those of you that know him and don't know him, you've seen him on television. You've seen him in movies. He, in the science fiction world, is most notable for being on Star Trek Enterprise. He's in True Blood. He was in the movie 2012. He is in so much stuff. It's pathetic. He's a busy, busy guy. He's been on with us twice before, and he's now going to be on with us again on June 3rd. John Billingsley, he's a good guy. Thank you, Brian. He's been on twice before, and now he's coming back for the third time, and this guy is wild. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to say that I took Brian's time on his program, but if you want to come over and laugh, you want to have a good time, June 3rd, 7 p.m. on NDB Media, that specific time, John Billingsley. He'll take your call. He loves talking to everyone, and he's a funny guy. I mean, dude, he loves to entertain. And
hey, Roger, tell us real quick about the rest of the week, what you have lined up. I've already talked about your sports talk with the guys every Saturday. Tell us what you have planned for the rest of the week so the fans out there can catch your shows.
Well, I appreciate that, Brian. I stole his thunder, and I'll take it a little quick. Today on NDB Sports, we have two sports programs. We have the Tri-State Sports Guys at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on NDB2. And at 7:30 p.m., of course, we have the Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fan at 7:30 p.m. On Thursdays, of course, we have the Travel Itch Radio on the main channel. That's at 5 p.m. At 7 p.m., we have another program also on NDB Media. On Friday, of course, what do we have? I don't know what we have on Friday.
We have Matt Alvarez on Friday, right?
That's right. Oh, my God, I can't believe I blew that. Matt Alvarez is on at 1 p.m. Pacific time. And, of course, in the morning, the Couch Potato is on. And I believe we may have a special guest on Friday. I'm not certain yet. But, yeah, it's, you know, we're back in it, guys. And, of course, Saturday morning, we just get to screw around and call it a sports program.
Roger, on Fridays, I've been listening, you know, Monday and Friday, Couch and, what's her name, Andrea?
Yes, they're in the morning at 6:30.
They're good. I love listening to her talk. I mean, she's got a lot of fire in her. If you're not familiar with the show, it's Sports Talk Over Coffee every Monday and Friday morning. I think it's at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific. Am I right? A.M. in the morning.
In the morning, yes, it is. You're right.
Yeah, and I mean, these guys are good. I mean, Andrea is a Boston Red Sox fan, and she's very entertaining. She knows her stuff about all baseball, actually. I listened to their show this past Monday. Great show, by the way.
I want to thank you for that. Yes, as a matter of fact, for those of you that know and don't know, Andrea is also on Sirius Radio, Sirius XM Radio. And she is a star. There's no doubt about it. She knows her stuff. She has her opinions, and she lets it be known. And Andrea is really, really sharp on everything. And as everyone knows in the blogosphere, she went a little overboard on one player, and I caught her on it, and I just love rubbing it in her face now. Because that's the only thing I could ever catch that girl on, because she doesn't make mistakes. So I
well,
will
call Sonny out the other day. She was disagreeing with Sonny. It was funny. She's so opinionated. You know, most people kind of backed out a little bit. Say, okay, over. She will not. She'll keep going until she wins. And it's just a good team. They make a very good team.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when I was speaking to Lenny Melnick, and that program came about because of Lenny Melnick. Here's the deal. When we were in massive expansion mode, we do not have 50,000 programs, Brian. We only have 49,862, so stop exaggerating. But we were in a massive expansion. That's right. And I went to Lenny about purchasing his channel. I wanted the Lenny Melnick channel on Blog Talk Radio because it was an old one. And it turned out that we didn't actually do that. But he suggested, why doesn't Andrea do a program on Blog Talk Radio? She returned to Blog Talk Radio. She's been thinking about it. And we said, hell yeah. So for a few weeks, I was talking to Andrea. Hey, Andrea, we're ready to go. We'll take you whenever. And she said, well, she wanted a co-host. I said, okay, well, I'll be your co-host. And she said, yeah, I want a co-host. I said, oh, okay. Well, I'll look around.
Roger. Why don't you line me and her up for a show one day on NDB Media? I'd love to do a show with her one day. That'd be fun.
Hell yeah. All right. I will talk to her right away and see what we can do. But, you know, she wanted the couch potato and she got him. So it was, she's what, fantasy royalty? And he is the hardest working man. What do you get? Oh, my God. You get a damn good program on Monday and Friday.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Good show. So I want you to set that up. I'd like to do a show where they put her Red Sox down, you know, just stomp on them while they're down and, you know, all that good stuff. But anyway, back to baseball. Last night I was watching the San Francisco Giants and the Nationals. But, you know, the Nationals are struggling. The Braves are winning right now. The Nationals are losing. And every day you look, another half game gets added to that deficit. You know, the Nationals better be careful. Why do you think they're struggling? Last night they had a 2-0 lead. Strasburg gave up one run, I believe. He left. They ended up tying the game, going to extra innings. And Pablo Sandoval, the Panda, hit a 2-run homer walk-off in the 10th. So what is the Nationals' problem this season?
You know, we should be asking Andrea this. But look, the Nationals unbelievably have fallen to 23-23. They have some issues in their – it's pitching. It's all pitching, predominantly in the bullpen. They have blown some games that were in the bag. And I think their problem, Brian. It's their pitching. You know, Strasburg is not the answer. They do need a stronger bullpen, and they're blowing some games that were in hand. And they're just, you know, they're just okay. Their hitting is kind of blah. This team, this team is believing the hype. They've had some injuries, but Atlanta is just outplaying everyone. These guys are hot, 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 and they're taking advantage of it.
I'll tell you, part of the problem, the Giants are just very good. And they swept the Braves in San Fran. Now they're just making a joke of the Nationals. I mean, the National League East can't compare to the Giants right now. The Giants have it all. I mean, they're not the team that's just going to kill you hitting the ball, but their pitching is so good. They don't blow leads. They play baseball the right way, fundamentally sound baseball. But the Nationals, you're right, they believe the hype. The Braves are a team built on their farm system, and people forget that. These guys are very good players. They're young. The pitching is an issue for the Braves. Somebody has to step up. They need some more consistent hitting, but I don't see the Nationals really catching the Braves. Do you?
I actually don't see them. I really don't. It's their hitting. This team is not hitting, Brian. That's what it comes down to. And knowing that there's questions in their bullpen, this team, it's just not doing it. It's not getting it done. And I'm sorry, Washington National fans. It is early. Don't get me wrong. We are ending up, you know, May. But this is in June. We're going to see if they're going to be competitive or not. And they're right now just a 500 team at the end of May. That's, you know, there's still time for them, but they got to get it together, like, now.
You're right. You know, it bothers me when people say April doesn't matter. Well, I mean, it does matter. I mean, there's some teams right now, Roger, that are out of the playoffs. I mean, there's no way possible they're going to come back. April does matter. May does matter because it gives you a chance to see what your needs are, what your team is. It gives you a chance to get some kind of chemistry going. And the Braves, as young a team as they are, Roger, I thought they may struggle early. But actually, they're doing very well, and I expect them to get better as the season goes on. But, I mean, look at the Yankees. Let's talk about your beloved Yankees. Nobody thought that those guys would be in first place in the East right now with all of the injuries. But look what's happening. They're starting to get their players back now, and they're in first place. Can you imagine what's going to happen when they all come back?
Yeah, you know what? They're just doing very well. These guys that came up to replace the big guys were hungry, and they knew this was going to be their chance to shine, and they did. Cashman actually lucked out for the second year in a row, hiring these extra guys that are doing very well, and this team is it's in good shape. But the reality is I still see some issues with the Yankees, but I'm happy. I am happy where they are. And that's why I don't really predict anymore, Brian, because sometimes you think teams are just going to do so well and they just let up. And
so tell me, how are they going to do it, like at the All-Star break? Who are they going to go after, do you think? Because I look at their starting pitching, and I think they need some help there.
Oh, they need a lot of help there. They need help. This kid Pineda may be coming back halfway through the season, and Andy Pettit has gone down again. The 40-year-old monolith. The reality is the Yankees need pitching. When they were winning in the late 90s, and even in the early part of the last decade of the 2000s, they had pitching. And right now, that is the weakest team. Look, the Yankees can out-hit everyone, but they're a swing-and-a-miss team. They will hit more homers, they will get more runs, but that's what they do to the league. When you have a team that has good pitching, you can dominate the Yankees because it's a swing and miss team. So you've got to get good pitching to be in the situation to make the game credible so the Yankees can play.
Roger, you know what I did in my fantasy team is I gambled with the Yankees players. I had Teixeira, I drafted him. I got a steal on Teixeira and Granderson. Granderson is one of the best outfielders in baseball, and believe it or not, I got him late in the draft. Nobody wanted to touch this guy, and I'm in a keeper league. So I'm getting Granderson and Teixeira back. So imagine, and I'm at 500. Imagine how my season is going to go if these guys catch fire.
Yeah, I think you're going to be okay with Granderson. I don't know about Teixeira, even though in the last few days, apparently he had his first minor league start, and I think he went 2-for-4, got himself a double, and he said he was feeling just fine. So,
well, he doesn't hit anyway in April or March, April, May. He doesn't hit good anyway. So, I mean, having him on your bench, I would have him on my bench anyway if I had him, if he was healthy. So it's not like I would start him anyway. But when it gets June, July, and August, Chera's going to knock the cover off the ball if he's healthy.
Yeah. I think you're going to be in darn good shape, Brian, let me tell you. I'm happy with my team. But, you know, Brian, I prefer to keep it quiet. I don't talk about my team because the minute someone says Yankees, everyone else gets their underwear in a twist. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm a Yankee. And just, yeah. Have you ever, ever heard me rub my Yankees in anyone's face? No, huh?
Nope, you don't. You're a humble Yankee fan. You're one of few.
A humble Yankee fan?
Yeah, there's not many.
There
are not many of them. But the Yankees, though, looking at them, what are they going to do? I mean, they always make these moves, especially when the man was there, you know, before Steinbrenner, before he's gone. Will Cashman do the same thing? Will Cashman spend the money? Will Cashman, you know, I guess check his testicular fortitude and go out and get some players to help them win? Because Yankee fans are not going to settle for barely making the playoffs or missing the playoffs. They want World Series wins. They could care less about the playoffs.
I don't know, Brian. Apparently the Yankees actually have a budget now, which was shocking to me. And I don't know, last year they didn't get anyone. This year, I don't know, they might. But now everyone in baseball is playing tough with the Yankees. They know the Yankees are going to come calling, and they want so many players from the Yankees, and the Yankees are just like, you know what, whatever, it's okay.
We're not going to be taken like we used to be. Well, you have to have a budget, because look at the Dodgers. I mean,
A budget? Wait, you said Yankees and budget?
Dude,
that's like calling God a non-believer. Cut it out, Brian. Cut it out.
I mean, spending money doesn't necessarily make you good. Look at the Dodgers. I mean, you're familiar with them over there in L.A. I mean, what's wrong with them? Is it the injuries? Is it Don Mattingly? Is it chemistry? What is it? These guys have never gelled. We've almost had them a year.
It has to be the chemistry, Brian, because some of the guys they brought over from Boston just have a bad attitude. Let me see. What's that pitcher's name that everyone thinks is so good, but he's really a jerk? Josh Beckett, yes. He's a punk. He's just a punk, and that's just the way it is. And he is just – it's just not a good thing. And I think they just sat down Ethier. I don't know what is going on with this team, man. I mean, so talented, and yet they just don't deliver. I don't know what the thing is with the Dodgers, dude. I really
don't. Well, Don Mattingly, is he really a manager? I mean, is he really – I believe if you put Bobby Cox on that Dodgers team or Joe Torre coming back, they can make those players gel together and win games. It just seems like Don Mattingly, you know, he's out of his element right now. I just don't think he's ready for this challenge.
I'm having a flashback to my high school days. I'm reaching for my first baseman's mitt. And I'm looking up, I'm oiling it. Oh, there it is, Don Mattingly on my first baseman's mitt. Oh, geez.
I love Don Mattingly.
Let me see. Oh, there's my baseball card, my 1986 Don Mattingly baseball card that I still have in my wallet. Yeah, eat your heart out, Bob Hopkins, you moron.
Is it top? Is it the 86 top?
Yes. The one with that brown border, you know, it looks like wood.
That's 87, isn't it?
I'll have.
I think Don Mattingly was 85. His rookie with the card was 86.
Oh no! Hell no! Oh no! Hell no! 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 Don Mattingly's rookie year was 1983.
Right. I'm talking about the card. I'm talking about the 87 card is brown.
Oh well, yeah. That I believe. That one I won't argue. I just
I thought it was 86. But actually, it may be the 87 card for the 86 season, and that's why I called it the 86.
Yeah, you're right. I remember when baseball collecting was fun, Roger, when there was Topps, Donruss, and Fleer. Those were the only, and then they came out with the Upper Deck, and then all
that's
of a sudden
right.
it just exploded, man. It just, it's like too many cards were being made. I remember just saving my money to open that pack, get the bubble gum out, and get a Bo Jackson rated rookie or, you know, someone like that, get the big name players. I still have millions of baseball cards, by the way.
Hey, Brian, I am going to have to take pictures of my Tony Gwynn and Wade Boggs rookie cards.
I think I have those. I know I have Wade Boggs. I know I have Wade Boggs. Tony Gwynn was 83, right, his rookie?
82. Oh, wait.
Card.
Oh, no, wait. No,
Wade
you're
Boggs,
right.
Boggs, I believe.
No, they were both 83. You're right.
Yeah.
Wade Boggs was 83. And Tony Gwynn was 83, and Cal Ripken was 82. So, you're right. Don Mattingly was also, and I have the 83 Don Mattingly card, and but, you know, Don Mattingly's Don Mattingly. He's just, I loved watching that guy play. And it was Don Mattingly and Ron Guidry. Those were my guys, 23 and 49, baby.
Well, I just loved collecting baseball cards as a kid. I just lost its value. All your cards went to crap. I remember I have a 64 Topps Willie Mays card.
Wow.
I have some old cards, especially football cards and Ways, but baseball was fun, especially, you know, you could get – I mean, Barry Bonds rookies you could get. I mean, I don't know how much they're worth now. I haven't checked the price in 20 years, so I don't know how much baseball cards are worth anymore. Is there any value to them?
Oh, yeah, there are, but the steroids – players have been reduced in value, but Barry Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame anyway, so they have taken a hit.
I have Mark McGwire's USA card that I sold for $200, and now it's probably not worth anything.
That's right. And I'm telling you, Brian, going back to Mark McGwire, that guy had a chance to make the Hall of Fame. I had said it. I said no matter what, he still has an outside chance of making the Hall of Fame. But when he came clean and said he did it, that destroyed it. I said he will never make the Hall of Fame now. He will never be elected to the Hall of Fame.
Hey, do you remember those misprint cards you'd get? Do you remember the Billy Ripken card that was worth so much money?
I sure do.
They had the word F-face on it, under his bat.
That's right.
Yeah, I love those misprints and things like that. I remember getting for example, it was a Wade Boggs pitcher, but a Don Mattingly card or something, getting a misprint like that. That was worth a lot of money back in the day.
Yes, and I think those are still worth quite a bit of money. You know, I actually had Cal Ripken's rookie card, too, from Fleer. Fleer. I had the Fleer one for him, but the one to collect was the top because those were better. Remember the 82 cards, or it was the 83 cards? It had a portrait of them, and it also had an action shot of them. Remember those, the 83 cards?
Yeah, it was the one. What was it called? Is it the ones you turn and that changes the picture? Remember those cards?
Yeah, Brian, I remember those, but I don't recall it as being that set. I remember the cards that when you turned them over, they had their stats, and then they had, remember that game where it said single, home run, double, ground, whatever it was,
yeah.
Remember?
Yeah,
collect
yeah,
the cards and actually play a game, remember that?
Yep. And I have about every Nolan Ryan card known to man.
Wow. Hey, apparently, stupid Bleacher Report is saying that Don Mattingly rips the players. This is coming in right now.
Wow. See, they're listening to Blog Talk Radio. That's what's happening. They're listening to our show. I have a Honus Wagner rookie. Is that worth any money?
Yeah, I think you might be able to go out for lunch with that card or something, you know.
I'm joking.
Yeah, Honus Wagner. Oh, yeah. Mickey Mantle, too. That one might be worth a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I loved baseball back in the days, and there's no sport that'll ever be as close to my heart as baseball, man. Going through the baseball cards with your dad, looking through them all, comparing them with your friends, trading them. I mean, it's just something about baseball, man. It's just, it'll always be close to me.
Okay, Don Mattingly may now be fired.
Why, because he went off on Hanley Ramirez?
No. This is being reported by Ken Rosenthal at Fox News, Fox Sports. It says, manager Don Mattingly benched right fielder Andre Ethier, lashed out at his player's lack of mental toughness, and questioned upper management's roster construction in comments to reporters before Wednesday's game
fired.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah, he's fired.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, Don. Bye-bye. See, I promise I'm not reading. I'm driving on the road. I can't see the internet. But I really question Don Mattingly being the coach of that team. I don't know if he has what it takes.
Wow. He says, quote, there has to be a mixture of competitiveness. It's not. Let's put an all-star team together and an all-star team win. It's finding the balance of a team that has a little bit of grit and will fight you and also have a talent to go with it. All grit and no talent isn't going to make you successful, but all talent and no grit is not going to get you there either. Woo-hoo! Wow, Don. You're gone. See ya.
Wow. Remember what you said, Roger? You don't call your boss out in public. You don't humiliate, embarrass him. Just look. I mean, he just did it. He's biting the hand that's feeding him. He's gone, and I don't think he'll get another job after that.
Oh, Don, what an idiot.
Think about it. Are you going to hire Don Mattingly after he come out and did this, and he can't win with what he had? I mean, if you can't win with that team, then there's a problem. But really, who's going to take a shot on him?
And if you can't win with that team because it's poorly constructed, you never say it. Yeah, never say it. I wouldn't hire him.
The Dodgers. I mean, great baseball player, just like Wade Boggs was. But, you know, Jordan was a great player too. Is he a good manager? No.
Yeah, because Jordan wants people around him. They're just going to say yes. Yes, Jordan, you're a god, and you're right. And he has those people. So that's why his team sucks.
Yep, and they always will suck as long as he's there.
Yeah. I'm going to post this one on Facebook, so as soon as you get home, Brian, you can take a look at it. But, yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Don Mattingly is gone.
Bye-bye, Don. But really, is that going to be enough to spark the Dodgers? What are the scores right now in baseball? Are they, I know it's a day game. Are the Dodgers beating the Brewers?
I'll tell you right now, I am right there on MajorLeagueBaseball.com. Let's see what we have. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a look at today's scores just as Brian suggests. So right now, coming to you in the top of the sixth, the Cincinnati Reds and the New York Mets are tied 2-2 in the top of the sixth, Harvey versus Hanahan. In the top of the eighth, Minnesota is being shot at. Booyah! By Atlanta, 8-1. It's top of the eighth. Rasmus against Colabello. And the Dodgers, in the bottom of the fourth, at Milwaukee, Ryu against Weeks, are just ripping the Brewers 7-0. And Texas, in the bottom of the third, is beating Oakland 3-0. And I think those are all the games that we have as of right now. Nothing else is live.
Well, maybe the Dodgers got the message that Don Mattingly's out. And they're playing better now.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Because they were an underdog. The Dodgers were underdog today on the road in Milwaukee. So, you know, up 7-0, not bad.
No, not bad at all. As a matter of fact,
the Nationals today, the Nationals, Roger, are playing at San Francisco this afternoon. And here you go again. I mean, the Giants are looking for the sweep in the four-game series. Well, what is it? Today's Wednesday. the three-game series be swept right here by the Giants. That's big.
Yeah, and that means if they are swept, they're going to be below 500. And that's just not good for the Nationals. I just don't think they have it in them. But did you hear the news switching over to the American League? Mike Trout becomes the youngest man or youngest baseball player to hit for the cycle.
Ever? I thought he joined a company of people, but I didn't think he was the youngest.
Well, then I may be mistaken. Maybe he was the youngest.
You're probably right. I just didn't think that. I saw it last night. This guy can hit the ball, Kenny. I mean, he drove that pitch out. That ball hit the ground almost, and he drove it out to right center just like it was nothing.
Oh, here we go. Mike Trout becomes the youngest player in American League history. American League history. And the sixth in Angels history to hit for the cycle. So the youngest player in American League history. There it is.
That's awesome. The Angels are, at least the Angels have hope probably, but the Dodgers, there's no hope for them right now.
Yeah, and everyone who thought the Dodgers were going to compete, that was one of the few prognostications that I had, was nope, the Dodgers have to learn their lesson, just like the Yankees did. Just spending money doesn't mean you're going to be competitive. The Dodgers have to learn the hard way what it is to have money. Just like the Yankees did. The Yankees just spent freely and it didn't give them anything till they got smart. And it took them a decade to learn that.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, the West is all about the Giants right now. There's just something about the Giants, Roger. What makes them so successful where every year they're going to the World Series and beating teams that they're underdogs to?
You know, they've got that disease over there in San Francisco. These guys show up every day. They hustle. They play it hard. They play it like the way it should be. And they believe in each other, Brian. And management is doing everything they can to get them players to compete. When you know management's got your back, when supposedly, you know, they don't have all the money in the world, and yet they're getting players to, you know, get you there, that says a lot, dude. And that team's got it. They know management's on their side.
Yeah, and the pitching staff, though, is always just, they're four deep. I mean, those guys, I mean, they have hit 1-5. Every time you look at the Giants, I mean, the pitcher is better than yours no matter what day you pitch against. I mean, they're just so good at playing small ball. Because I mean, they're not a home run team, are they, Roger? They're just a regular, fundamentally sound baseball team.
Yeah, this is a team that plays good defense. They're going to play you hard, and they have stifling starting pitching. They're good. You know they're going to play you hard, and you just got to grind it out against the Giants, and the Giants generally ground it out against you better. They've got these guys that are right there. And speaking of it, the game goes at 12:45 p.m. Eastern, or 3:45 p.m. Eastern today, the Giants go against the Nationals. And it looks like Bumgarner is starting for the Giants. And who is starting for the
I think Gio Gonzalez is starting.
Yeah. Gio Gonzalez with a 4.01 ERA. Wow.
That's
bad.
He was a Cy Young contender, you know. People were putting him in the Cy Young conversation.
Yeah. His numbers have been okay, but a 4.01, his whiff is 1.22.
In the National League, that four is terrible. I mean,
that's right.
Getting lit up. In the American League, you can survive and keep your job, but in the National League, the four is not going to get you anywhere.
I agree. So they're playing at San Francisco. It's going to be good. I got to tell you, this really looks to be a sweet, sweet matchup today. But I would have to give it to the Giants. Yeah, unfortunately. But on any given day, right? Any given day.
Yeah, it's just a day game. The Giants are so hard to beat at home. I mean, it's just like any time a team travels all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast, and usually the game's at 10:15 Eastern, just they're off. Their sleep schedule off. Their day, everything's wrong. But today is an early game, so So that's normal for San Francisco, but that's like 12 o'clock in the day, a baseball game for the Nationals. That's still got them off schedule. And now they're going to have to get on their plane after this game and go all the way back to the East Coast probably. So unless they have a road series, another one out there, which they usually do. But that's just a lot of wear and tear on the Nationals team that's struggling already. You can't get your confidence on the road, really. You have to have it at home.
Yeah. You know, looking at what Strasburg's line yesterday, he was actually he was good, but it wasn't – I've been reading all these reports that this was a great game for him. No. He went 7 innings, gave 5 hits, gave up a run. It was earned. Walked 3, struck out 7. That's what you expect from your starting pitcher. That wasn't a great game. This is Strasburg. This is the East. That's what you're supposed to do every day. See, that's why people blow so much out of proportion, Brian. That's what your main guy is supposed to do every day. That's not a great game. That's what he is supposed to do.
Yep, he's supposed to give you at least 7 at the minimum, and he's supposed to keep it down. Your ace is supposed to keep you in the game, and he did that. I mean, he did his job yesterday. You could say he did his job.
Yes, he did, but all this stuff that he was phenomenal and, you know, a great game, cut it out. Cut it out. But, Brian, oh, my God, the 2 hours are almost gone.
Yep, it is, and I'm getting close to home. I'm probably about 10 minutes away, 15 minutes. So thanks for joining me today, and now I don't have to do a show tonight.
Well, it was a pleasure being able to do it with you, pal, I got to tell you. I really enjoy speaking sports with you. I mean, think about it, Brian. You and I spent the first 45 minutes talking about theory when it comes to umpiring and reffing. We did that for 40 minutes, dude. That was easy.
Yeah, that was fun, too. So, I mean, we covered a lot of stuff in 2 hours. We had a good time doing it. Hey, we actually broke some news before it was actually broken, really. So just watch out for Don Mattingly getting canned today.
Yep, I think he's gone. And ladies and gentlemen, disappearing over the real world, we may have something that has happened in the United Kingdom. So stay tuned. Something apparently has happened. We are receiving sketchy reports right now. And there she is. The Wani Winch just told us 90 seconds.
So what happened, Roger? Give me a hint.
I'm not trying to keep it from you. It's just I'm getting reports that apparently some sort of terrorist incident has taken place in London, but it was something like a one-off. There's one person dead, and they believe it to be a soldier. So details are coming in as we speak. This just came to us within the last 4 to 5 minutes. So we just know something is going on over in the United Kingdom. It is rather small, but something is going on. So we'll know shortly. Ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Yeah, this is it, Brian. Take us away. We're down to about 40 seconds.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And catch us Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And we'll get back to our regular schedule. But I want to thank Roger Noriega from NDB Media, a.k.a. the Scorekeeper, for joining us. Making the 2 hours fun. Catch him Saturday morning, Sports Talk with the Guys at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific. Roger, you have a great day, and thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, guys, and our prayers to your dad as well, Brian. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thanks. All right, guys, we'll see you. We're out of here. Peace!